And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have there out there tonight already. And tonight is a special report because we saw that some documents tumbled out of the national security state relating to the JFK assassination. And there's a lot of deep state spin on them, which is kind of interesting that they had this so ready. Now, the majority of the files, of course, the JFK assassination files are still being held back, especially the all-important ones, such as the ones dealing with the aerospace conspiracy. So the Jim Garrison records, the George Joannides file, for example. But so we're going to get into this tonight because they were under mandated by law, actually, in 1992. By Congress after the JFK movie came out. It caused such a ruckus that there were congressional hearings and they decided, you know what, in 25 years, win, lose, or draw, all these things have to come out and the president needs to sign on to that and all the rest. So the CIA were under orders to do that. They didn't appreciate it. October 26, 2017 rolls around, which is the 25-year deadline for the records to come out. And President Trump is preparing to release them, but the CIA enters his office with something important on that morning, and then the FBI director is in there. So we've got Pompeo and some other people from the CIA, and they're convincing Trump, don't do it, don't do it. And so Trump takes a sliver of those files, and he does get some important files out, more than this round, and then they kicked the can down to October 2021. And then Biden said, no dice, I'm not going to do it, but we'll check back in with you in 2022. And maybe by 2029, it'll all be out. So we've seen a lot of this weirdness with throwing the files further and further down the road. And the files relate to President Kennedy's assassination in 1963. Okay, so we're talking 58 years ago. So there wouldn't be any normal reason for holding them back. So now, you know, we see all the time these kind of stealth archives out there, these things that are out there, and they say, at some point, release them. Pfizer, for example, recently said, well, you can let out the records of what we really did here in 2084. It doesn't do any good. And I think that there should be a new rule passed in Congress that nobody needs to wait for anything. Just give us the files now. We paid for them. We deserve them. So the CIA, in particular, under the greatest cloud of suspicion for assassinating the president, this is the issue. They were well aware of Lee Harvey Oswald. As I showed in the documentaries I've done and the countless research of Peter Dale Scott and others, was not involved in the shooting at all. And he, was used as the patsy. And then they were able to, you know, by moving him around on a board, give him a kind of a legend to appear guilty. The problem was the mechanics of the assassination did not allow for one assassin anyway. So they put together the Warren Commission, which is actually nicknamed the Dulles Commission in intelligence circles for the CIA director that Kennedy had fired, Alan Dulles. So when they came out and they said, oh, it was just a lone gunman, isn't this too bad? And they covered up all the evidence. So the Warren Commission is one of the worst things that was ever hoisted on the American public and the world. The question is, why? Why would an entire government participate in the assassination and then the cover-up of President Kennedy? Well, these records that came out today had a particular spin to them. There's only 1,500 of them. And, you know, it's interesting because we often hear, well, there's only 500 files, 500 documents left to go. No, it's 5,000 files. So 5,000 files, and each file could contain thousands of documents. So there's hundreds of thousands of documents from the CIA and the FBI and others that remain in relation to this. So they've been trying to get past this over and over again, be like, it's a closed chapter and all the rest. And if anything is in there, oh, it was the Soviets that did it. And that's what they try to pull this time, which is, oh, the Russians were to blame that's why so much secrecy. And, you know, so they came up with really, I was reading through these files. I'm very familiar with the JFK assassination. I've studied it for over two decades. I know the best JFK researchers. I follow their work. We've had most of them on this program. So I can tell you that what they released today was just fluffy stuff, and then a few debunked things about them claiming that Oswald was a Soviet assassin. No, in fact, Oswald had been trained by the Civil Air Patrol and indoctrinated into the Central Intelligence Agency. That's the role that he played as a double agent, pretending to be a communist and all that kind of stuff. The problem is there's documented evidence that he worked for Guy Bannister, and Guy Bannister was a hardcore right-wing anti-communist. So, and what he would have Oswald do is infiltrate student groups pretending that he was a Marxist and all this stuff. Eventually, they would leave enough of a trail of Oswald to be able to pull this off. But I want to show you just how stupid the release was today, unfortunately, and I expect it to get dumb like this, but it's a very sinister way to do it. In relation to what we're looking at now, because all of the articles referencing it, they all have to bring up QAnon. And as you know, like on this show, for example, we were always suspect about these types of movements, anonymous movements, computer movements where anybody could be, you know, you could be dealing with John Brennan behind that thing. So, but nonetheless, you know, good people involved, bad people involved, whatever it happens to be, it has nothing to do with the assassination. The assassination took place 58 years ago. So them trying to drag it on and be like, aha, it's the QAnon people. But just, you know, QAnon came around in 2017 and is largely, you know, pumped up more by the media than anybody else. So we're looking at strange narrative control, because there's a major problem with what they want to do in relation to other threats and emergency powers that they want to seize, that is the deep state through the intelligence agencies. So the Central Intelligence Agency has a major trust problem. The fundamental core of that problem is that it's well understood that the Central Intelligence Agency assassinated President Kennedy, and then the U.S. government covered that up. There's a lot of research, and it's solid research. Over 58 years, it has stood up remarkably well. So, the Central Intelligence Agency, very deeply involved in this, and of major figures from it, like Alan Dulles and Jesus. You know, there's actually a host of, I mean, Angleton, Jesus James Angleton was such a core figure in setting it up. Alan Dulles, I have some confessions here that I'm going to read when we're done today, which come from people who were working with David Attlee Phillips, saying that he had, was training Oswald to, you know, be an anti-Castro fighter and to do all these things, and that this guy had actually been working for him as part of this attempt to take back the island from Castro, which again is so unusual. And we've documented on this program, there's so many variables when it comes to understanding the geopolitical situation in 1963 about Cuba. It's not as flat as a bunch of right-wingers wanted the Cuban island back and the Russians wanted to keep it for Castro. That's one part of it. But the question is, why was Cuba so valuable that they would risk World War III over it with the Cuban Missile Crisis, which President Kennedy defused? So those are kind of part of the larger questions that we address on this. But let's go with their simple narrative here that they came out with today. These are the exciting new records. You ready? Oswald met KGB before JFK assassination. Delayed records dump shows. Okay. This is where they're coming from. And the idea is this. In their records, they're saying, oh, Oswald went to Mexico City 6 weeks before the assassination, and he demanded at the Soviet embassy to get a visa to go to Cuba and to go to the Soviet Union. Unfortunately, there's no evidence, zero evidence, that Oswald ever went there. And in fact, it seems absolutely assured that it was a lookalike or somebody who went down there and just pretended to be him. The pictures that the CIA submitted for Oswald being in Mexico City is this guy. And this guy doesn't look anything like Oswald. This is what this story means. They're saying Oswald met the KGB in Mexico City. And, you know, oh, there was an assassination specialist that he met with. Those are the pictures that they have of Oswald at that embassy. It's not him. So they don't have any evidence, and they never produced any. So later, there was all this controversy, and they said, well, you know, maybe those aren't the right pictures. The cameras are broken. That's what it was. So can you imagine the Central Intelligence Agency, you know, monitoring a foreign entity, and their cameras break just on the day that Oswald gets there? Shoot. So obviously, whoever they sent down there, you know, this guy or whoever, makes a big noise and says, I'm Lee Oswald, I'm Lee Oswald. And that's enough of a trail for them to say, oh. Now, they've been trying to lay this out recently. Rolling Stone, which has become such an establishment mouthpiece for everything from Pfizer to assassinations or whatever. They, you know, this used to be the counterculture magazine, and then it's just become, you know, basically thoroughly conservative. And what's interesting is they've been trying to tear apart Oliver Stone's new documentary dealing with the Kennedy assassination and going through the evidence, which shows the Central Intelligence Agency was involved in his murder. And all the evidence is there. It's piled up so heavy after 58 years. It's just, it's a joke. And I can prove the case in 5 to 10 minutes at this point. And so this is their new line now. This is where Oliver Stone got his loony JFK conspiracies from. The origin story for the CIA killed Kennedy myth is twistier than a magic bullet. It was Moscow. Oh, yeah. So it's the Russians. The Russians, they created everything bad. The CIA was good. The Russians were bad. So this is where the limp records release today leads as well. It's mostly nonsensical. I downloaded all the PDFs and I've been reading them and indexing them just for the hell of it, because you never know what's going to be in there. Of course, President Kennedy assassinated in crossfire from 3 rifles, no magic bullets, none of that stuff. He was killed by a frontal shot by a French gunman on the grassy knoll, and who was CIA hire, and the Central Intelligence Agency had proved that, you know, well, the kind of triangulation of crossfire set up in Dealey Plaza was ideal for military style intelligence ambush for President Kennedy. There are a number of unusual lingering factors about the assassination. One is there's a major aerospace aspect that we're going to get into tonight. And a lot of those are the records that are being held up. Those are the Jim Garrison records, one, and two, the interplay Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and others around this assassination. Now, something interesting happened, which I consider, there's been two real breakthroughs in the JFK case, in my opinion, over the past 5 years. And one of them happened right here on this program. We had the Watergate lawyer Douglas Caddy come on the program and state unequivocally that his good friend, who was E. Howard Hunt, who was the CIA super spy, who they temporarily retired and had him working at the Mullen Company in PR work, where Douglas Caddy did his legal work. And they placed him with Caddy, and they became great friends over the years. When Hunt, who was really the key CIA man through the 60s, got involved in the Watergate burglary, he was, after testifying and everything else, he was sentenced to prison. So he has a final meeting before he goes to prison. And there's a lot of things about Hunt as well that are going to make more sense as we study him, because Watergate itself, of course, has never been properly represented for what it was. And again, there's a much deeper aspect going on here than was ever released. That's just a fact. And so we'll get into a little bit of this with Hunt. At the end of his life, Hunt would implicate LBJ as organizing with the CIA the assassination of President Kennedy on the record. He gave the interview to his son, St. John Hunt, who I've spoken with. And, you know, most of us have seen that. And he identified the agents, Cord Meyer, as being involved, David Morales and others. So we have a whole group there. And so that's one CIA confession. But something interesting that we got from Caddy was the personal confession that Hunt made to him before he went to prison. Now, remember that Caddy was the lawyer for the Watergate 7. And there he is with Woodward and Bernstein. And there's a scene in the movie, All the President's Men, where when Woodward and Bernstein show up to the courtroom, they're looking at this lawyer who's representing the Watergate 7. And they're like, who is that? And it is, in fact, Caddy. So Caddy is a major historical figure and was involved in a number of really kind of pivotal moments in history. And what he said was that Hunt had told him Kennedy was assassinated over the UFO file. So I'm going to play that clip because this is the real revelation. Unfortunately, they dumped a lemon on us with the records, but we're going to get to the real thing tonight. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report on the JFK assassination records being blocked by the Central Intelligence Agency while they roll out little self-serving things like, oh, that Oswald, he was in Mexico City getting trained by the KGB. When it's been demonstrated that from 1958 onwards, the CIA had a relationship with him. Okay. And that's just a fact. We found that through the work of Jefferson Morley and others. All right. This is Caddy recounting his experience with Hunt, saying that Kennedy was killed over the aerospace UFO file alien issue. And this is from the documentary X-Protect UFO File Assassins that I did last year.
And then we walked out, and on the street there, I thought, well, this is the last time I see Howard. I'm going to make one more stab, okay, and see if I can get something here, you know. And I said, well, Howard, why was John Kennedy assassinated? He said, why was John Kennedy assassinated? He said, John Kennedy was assassinated because he was about to give our most vital secret to the Soviets, And I was stunned by that. I mean, John Kennedy, our president, Soviets, and I never even heard about such a thing. And I said, well, what was that? And at that point, he leaned forward and looked right in my eyes, directed my eyes, and he said, the alien presence, and reached out and shook my hand and then turned and walked away. And that was the last time I saw Howard. It didn't mean that much to me. I knew it was important, but it did not mean that much. There's no way I could, and the alien presence, I was not pretty familiar with that either, you know. But I remembered it. I knew it was important.
All right. So that's Caddy on the record. Now, both the deep state side of the research field, which doesn't like to deal with the UFO file, wouldn't deal with Caddy's revelation. They just, because they don't want to deal with the UFO file. The UFO file people were too busy chasing around after TTSA and the circus, and oh, Lou Elizondo raised his eyebrow, and GQ wants him as their hero of the year. So they got caught up in all those CIA games, and the core revelation in the middle of all this got missed, which is the Central Intelligence Agency murdered President Kennedy over the UFO file. That's the key piece. And we have a historical figure who was connected directly to the top spy assassin for the CIA, Howard Hunt. So Caddy being the Watergate 7 burglar. So, you know, in these fields of research, the UFO field of research, and on the deep state side of the research, they kind of drop the ball on this. The UFO side, they don't understand the what a deep state operation. They don't realize what the government is capable of. Once in a while, they like to yell, cover up, cover up. But they don't understand the machinations of how the government works. The deep state researchers clearly do, because they go through how the government covers up assassinations, the different methods that they use, for example. But in the separation of those two fields, the deep state people not dealing with the UFO file and the UFO file people not having the depth to research this thing, the important crux of understanding the Kennedy assassination has not been focused on properly. So we're going to get into that tonight and understand how a group called DISC, Defense Industrial Security Command, plays into this, and that all the major players in the JFK assassination all came out of this group. And we're also going to find out that somebody that I've covered on this program extensively, Jim Garrison, who was the DA of New Orleans, who actually prosecuted the only official case for murder in the JFK assassination. He, in the 1960s, pressing the case, kept coming up against aerospace connections when he was looking for killers in relation to this. He would find the connections being to NASA and defense contractors over and over again. So he's running into this thing and he doesn't quite understand where is this coming from, because it was not well established that inside that entire infrastructure was a group called X-Protect, and the X-Protect watches over aerospace secrets and the UFO file. That group has a whole machine available to it, and it is part of the Central Intelligence Agency. It's part of this weird corridor between the Central Intelligence Agency and the aerospace companies, and we're going to track into that tonight. But Garrison's the key figure in going after that, because while he was looking for one thing and aiming at one thing, he was getting another, and that's what he got is crucial now, and that's why those records won't be released. All right, let's also figure out the other set of records that's not even talked about in here, which is the George Ioannidis records. Okay, Ioannidis was a psychological warfare expert for the Central Intelligence Agency. He built the Oswald, mind operation. And this psychological operation is crucial. And the interesting thing is we didn't even know of the presence of George Ioannidis at the time that the records release group met and demanded that these records be released in 25 years for 2017. So in 1992, George Ioannidis was not on the radar. What happened, and it's quite a fascinating piece of this whole story, is that a Washington Post reporter named Jefferson Morley started digging into references to someone who was running a group called the DRE down there in New Orleans, as a kind of anti-Castro group. And this idea was, there was so much that tracked him into that. If you go to New Orleans in the summer of 1963, you're going to find the roots of the JFK assassination. So what Ioannidis is doing there is he's creating these groups and he's pitting them against Oswald, being like, oh, Oswald's a left winger and all that, and building the legend of Oswald as a communist. It's actually a very clever operation. But no one even knew who he was. Morley takes all of his research to his editors at the Washington Post, and they're scared. And they're also cover-up artists, because the Washington Post is founded by a bunch of CIA people. And Ben Bradley and all those people are all CIA. So what we have is a reporter inside of the Washington Post running into the crucial leg of the JFK story. This is a crucial piece, and it has to do with Ioannidis. But Ioannidis has a deep aerospace connection as well, as we're going to learn. So who was Ioannidis? Let's get into this a little bit. Ioannidis was a key figure for the Central Intelligence Agency. They gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award, which this is rare. This is not something they give out to everyone. Now, what I want to say is that Morley, when he discovers all this around 2002, decides to sue the Central Intelligence Agency for the Joannides records. The Central Intelligence Agency spends millions of dollars blocking access to those records. Now you have to wonder, first of all, why are they blocking them on that level? And why hadn't they mentioned them in relation to any of this? These are deep secret records, so much so that they're not even included in the original request for the records that came out of the Assassination Record Review Board. That push, the JFK Records Act in 1992, doesn't mention the Joannides files because they didn't know they existed. So Morley takes him to court, and Peter Dale Scott joins that suit, the professor that we've had on this program for many years, who coined the term the deep state, and many others. And over and over again, there's pushback, and the CIA won't release those records. And so it gets, you know, very strange when before he's elected to the Supreme Court, one of the main judges there, Kavanaugh, is involved in this case, and he doesn't let the records out. So there's a concerted effort to lock in those records, even beyond the records that we're looking for the CIA to give us. This is a different set. It's not even on the radar and not covered by the act. Joannides was active in 63 in creating these groups, and he was not known. And then in the 70s, when all these cases started to come forward, the CIA elected him to deal with Congress. The only problem with that is Congress had asked that no CIA personnel who were active in 1963 be involved in being a liaison for them in the records. The CIA said, well, this guy's clean. He wasn't doing anything like that in 63. Well, it turns out he was building Oswald and building the legend of Oswald. So those are the records that they're afraid of on one side, and on the other side, they're afraid of the Garrison records. And right in the middle of it is the aerospace file. And that is Admiral Bobby Inman, who is the deputy director of the CIA, giving the Lifetime Achievement Award to our friend Joannides. So Inman, Joannides. Joannides is dead. Inman is still alive and has served an SAIC. He was part of XE, which was the mercenary group that, Blackwater, when they changed their name, they used that. And Inman has a very interesting track record because in the late 80s, Inman came forward and he said, well, you know what? I do know that we have retrieval of UFO craft. He says this publicly on the record. He's also the former NSA director. So he was really the highest ranking official to acknowledge this stuff way before this wave of like Obama and everybody getting on the TTSA bandwagon and saying, well, you know, there are things flying in our space. There are UAP. So the rebranding of that whole thing and the false UFO threat that is run completely by the Central Intelligence Agency, they're getting all out of sorts because there are these other groups popping up. One of them I call Anna because it's annoying name anomaly. And I always stress that Anna is a beautiful name, but the ridiculous name they have for this thing is AOMISG. It's just this mess of a name. But that thing came up and tried to say, we're going to be in control of the UFO file. And then the CIA has held that control. So they wanted to work through this ASRO and the UAP task force thing. They wanted ASRO to be the next thing. And so they have the Director of National Intelligence, Averill Haines, now hosting these UAP days there in Washington, D.C. And she invites such luminaries as Jeff Bezos, who bought the Washington Post, of course, and Amazon and everything else he'd get his hands on, Whole Foods. And he has a big aerospace wing with Blue Origin going into space. But Avi Loeb was there too, don't you know? And he was saying, you know, what we have is we have AI aliens visiting us, and we need to get our own AI up to snuff to deal with them. So this is the nature of the interactions and the interplay here. And what I've found over and over again is the core secret to all of it has nothing to do with mafia or Cubans or communists or any of that stuff at all. It has to do with the fact that the aerospace wing got in control of the UFO file, got the advanced technology, got the advanced understanding, still probably hasn't perfected what they have. And that's part of the consolidation that's trying to happen. So they've put forward all of these figures from the Central Intelligence Agency, like Lou Elizondo and Counterintelligence Elizondo and Chris Mellon, to try to create an atmosphere that there's a threat out there and these are whistleblowers who are coming to help us. So the Central Intelligence Agency, of course, has created counterintelligence. And so they've got their two big counterintelligence people out there lying to the public about this. Now, how does all this relate to the JFK assassination? It does. It's actually the core piece, because if we go back to Hunt's confession to Caddy, he said President Kennedy is killed over what? The UFO file. And the alien presence associated with that. So that knowledge. And then when we look at Kennedy, what do we see in relation to the circumstances of the alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald? Well, Oswald was living right outside of Dallas, and he and his wife and child were staying with Ruth Payne. Ruth Payne's husband was Michael Payne. Michael Payne worked at Bell Helicopter, and his dad had developed the actual helicopter, Arthur Young. Arthur Young became a big specialist in consciousness and really kind of, you know, new age esoteric guy later. So that's already an unusual mix. But Arthur Young's wife, Ruth Forbes Payne, she is the one who is going to be hosting this group called The Nine. And it's a big channeling group, and they are communicating with these aliens off board. Michael Payne comes directly out of that whole thing. And then he goes to work for Bell Helicopter. And who is his boss when he gets there but Walter Dornberger? And again, Walter Dornberger is the top man at Bell Helicopter. But Dornberger's past is very dicey, and I've done some shows on it with Dr. Farrell here. But just to wrap it up in a nutshell, he was the key Nazi program man for the rocket program. And his understudy was Wernher von Braun, who became the father of our space program. So Dornberger's association with Payne, Michael Payne, who's his protege at Bell Helicopter, and now you have Lee Harvey Oswald staying with the Paynes. I mean, it's pretty unusual, especially since Oswald was supposedly a nobody who was working for minimum wage and, like, you know, nobody paid attention to or liked. So we have to kind of wrap our heads around the real story when we see the major media keep pushing out this junk like, oh, he was a KGB agent. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report on the JFK assassination files, of which a small portion got released today. Legally, the government and the Biden administration are bound to release the entire trove of CIA records over and over again. That's been stopped. Of course, the last time it was stopped before this Biden misadventure of Stepford Biden, was October 26, 2017, where we were actually live streaming right from our studio, and we had Vice and HBO there, and they wanted our instant reaction to the records coming out. And of course, the records didn't fully come out, and that was part of the issue. Right in that window, we had a lot of weird things happen. TTSA suddenly appeared out of the Tom DeLong blue. And that was a group that was set up to create this, hey, UFOs are a threat out there, and the CIA are heroes. They're helping to fight them. And we're going to get a group together here to get the real truth. And we want the truth from that government. And it had all CIA people on the board, as we've discussed here many times. Jim Semivan, 25-year veteran. Lou Elizondo, two decades A veteran, yes. Has he been around other intelligence circles like the DIA and Army Counterintelligence? Sure, but his core mission is the CIA. He worked directly for James Clapper, special assistant. Clapper was the DNI. And that's a high level that he was operating at. And I think it was because he's one of those guys, you know, he's like one of those guys who takes orders and is very slippery. But I think what they've tried to do with Elizondo, rolling him out as the kind of head of the UFO file disclosure, is a joke, because he, in the 3 years that he's been public, he has said so many things that are demonstrably false. And, you know, he's proven himself to be a liar multiple times in public, which CIA people tend to be good liars. That's what their job is very often. But the reason I mention that is we have to understand in that window where those records were supposed to come out, strange things did happen. TTSA came out within a few days of that records release, botched. And also Q and the Las Vegas shooting, all that stuff in one weird window in 2017. And I always look back to that as this period where a lot of different operations were vying for control over this. And what we got in December of 2017 was this weird article in the New York Times that was backed up by Brian Bender over at Politico. It was a very strange journalist that I've kept my eye on, and strange for this reason, in that he was always so supportive of this very sketchy TTSA story and Elizondo story from the start, when you'd think, you know, you'd be a little bit cynical. But no, Bender also, if you go back into his work, is a big Kennedy basher as well. So I've started to look at Bender through the lens of what's the next operation he's bringing forward, because every time they roll that UAP threat, UFO threat on, whether it's Kirsten Gillibrand, who we're going to get to, or Avril Haines, the director of National Intelligence, it's always through Bender. It's Bender is talking about it, and then the other magazines and the other news stories are able to pick up on it and say, oh, Politico reported on this. So I find that interesting, and I've had some very weird Twitter encounters with this guy where I've pointed these things out, and he has been like, you know, shame, 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 you know, just weird, like immature, very immature stuff. But if he ever wants to confess, I'm right here for him. And I want to specify also that in relation to Elizondo and Mellon, I've extended invitations for them to be on this program and tell their side of what this whole thing is, and to a gentleman's debate to go over those facts. And the problem is that their operation has relied on the fact of very friendly press. And part of that problem, when they get on this show, the entire operation under questioning, I could undo in 2 minutes, and it's very simple. One, are you still working for the government? The answer to that is yes. Two, are you still working as a contract agent for the Central Intelligence Agency? That's also a yes. Three, if the CIA asked you to lie in a counterintelligence operation to the public, would you do it, and have you done it? The answer to that is yes. They certainly have done it, and I have no reason to think they wouldn't do it again. So therefore, everything that they've said in relation to the UFO file could be just a CIA operation to lie to the public, because they're good counterintelligence people. That's the end of the story. So they don't want to come on this program and face that kind of you know, questioning and really answer hard questions when they can sit there and get softballs from the likes of George Knapp or GQ. You know, I mean, that's a lot easier. You just go out there and you say a lot of junk. You say, well, this stuff's classified. It's not classified. We know what it is. We don't know what it is. And they do that kind of dancing. But if you study the CIA, that's what they do. And on the level of the operations that those guys are at, as I've pointed out in this program, the fundamental rule is there is no truth. So they don't think that they're lying, because there's no truth. So they can say anything that they want and still feel like they're patriotic or, you know, God-fearing or whatever it happens to be, because there's no truth. That's the kind of programming that they get in the weird circles. So the growth of the Central Intelligence Agency was something that President Kennedy tried to fight. And a lot of it was in relation to the sprawling nature of the kind of secret government that was being created out of this. Kennedy couldn't believe it when he got in office, how many things the CIA were controlling that were supposed to be in the hands of the military. And he was, you know, himself, he had been in naval intelligence. He understood how these things work. So he saw where they were breaking the law. And this was a very crucial aspect to how President Kennedy came to come into their crosshairs. They had actually done a major psychological assessment of President Kennedy in the summer before the election. And I think that they were looking at the possibility that they may need to assassinate him if they couldn't psychologically trick him. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report on the JFK assassination records, the 1500 kind of flimsy document feed that they fed out today from the Stepford Biden administration. And, you know, the records, the majority of the records, especially the CIA records, have not been given out to the public and won't be. They've kicked the can to 2022, and Biden has suggested 2029. They'll throw it out even further on then. Their general idea is just keep pushing it back and make up any excuse to do that. The law, however, compels them to do it. So a strong enough legal case should be able to shake those records out. Unfortunately, even in that batch of records are not the Joannides records, which would be crucial to showing the setup of Oswald, the creation of this whole thing inside the CIA. No one expected anyone ever to ask anything about Joannides. He was a well-hidden secret. And as I mentioned, it was the Washington Post reporter who basically accidentally stumbled upon them, Jefferson Morley, who brought Joannides to our attention. No one else had even known the name up until Morley brought it out. And Morley's editors, of course, weren't interested in that. And he had to leave the Post. And he goes on doing his own work, analyzing the CIA. I'm not so sure that he's very interested in the UFO file, but he's damn interested in George Joannides, that's for sure. Okay, there's a document called the Torbett Report, which I've referred to, but it's crucial in understanding the Kennedy assassination. So I want to get into that. I also want to mention that Kennedy had a couple of key factors. We need to understand part of the reason Kennedy was assassinated is because he was so independent. One, he was independently wealthy. but he had his own ideas. He'd been through World War II. He'd been a congressman from 1946 to 1952, and then a senator from 1952 to 1960. And, you know, his dad had been very active throughout all types of different business. Of course, they often stress, well, he knew what the mafia was. It is actually helpful to know all these different aspects because it's much easier when you get into a position of power to understand who are your friends and who are your enemies, but also how things work at that level. So Kennedy had all that knowledge. He was a deep insider. One of the portions of his past and his background that are crucial to consider is his understanding of the UFO file. There's a group that was invested in strange anomalies happening in space and, you know, all kinds of things in relation to falling stars and all this other stuff. And they became involved in the Roswell incident. And the person that they briefed about their knowledge about Roswell was a young congressman named Jack Kennedy. But Kennedy had been given the entree into the world of the UFO file through his very good friend and the first defense secretary of the United States, James Forrestal. Here's a picture of Forrestal leading a young Kennedy here on a tour of a demolished Berlin, West Berlin. And that, of course, is Forrestal, fellow Catholic and good friend. Now, we know that Forrestal would become deeply involved with the UFO file and object to the secrecy around it. He was a huge advocate for sharing that information. And a long story short, shortly after he becomes defense secretary, they decide, you know, this guy is a real problem, and he's thrown out a window of Bethesda Hospital. They claim it's a suicide. But that entire shakeup of Kennedy's early life over the UFO file and the things that we don't know the level at which he was informed by Forrestal about the UFO file, but it seems very clear by the time he gets in there, he evinced an interest in the subject and he was well versed in it. And he understood that this was part of the problem of the CIA pulling away from the natural government. And, you know, President Kennedy in his youth coming up through that, his influences along that line, you know, we hear that Eisenhower took very great pains to explain to him the problem with the military-industrial complex and the situation where he found it. The problem was, just to sum this up, that the national security state had taken the knowledge of the UFO file and had started to break away from the actual government and be responsible to it. We have those stories about Eisenhower. You know, he stopped getting briefings from the CIA about what they were doing at Area 51. And he picks up the phone at a certain point and says, either I get a briefing at noon tomorrow or you're going to get the Eighth Army. Pick your choice. I've done it before. And he did get a briefing and he got something called CIA Blue Book, which is different than Project Blue Book. And the person he appointed to head that up was Richard Nixon. That's why Nixon comes in later with all the UFO stories. You know, he's showing Jackie Gleason dead aliens. He's training Robert Merritt to get these messages to Henry Kissinger about, you know, the secret formulas that they developed by redeveloping the UFO material. We've covered that heavily on this program. We had Robert Merritt, who's a real whistleblower, give us that information before his death on this program. And Merritt had been one of the few agents of the Houston plan, and his trail is well documented in history, and some very high level people I've discussed his background with in law enforcement, and top people have told me that Merritt was the real deal 100%. And when I talked to him, I tried on a number of levels to ask him the same question six different ways to see how he would change his answer, and he never did. So his stories about meeting Nixon and Nixon trying to use him as a messenger to get information about the UFO file back and forth and around government agencies has absolutely been overlooked and is a crucial, again, another crucial piece of history that would help us to understand this whole thing. But going back to Kennedy, he, just before he is assassinated, he asks the leader, the director of the CIA, to give him all the high-risk files, that is the high-risk cases that have happened in relation to the UFO incidents. And he wants to share that with the Russians because his idea is putting together a joint moon mission and doing joint space operations. He does not want war in space at any cost. He's seen, you know, having done the Cuban Missile Crisis, he's seen that we got that close to blowing the world up. And he really was our steward through that whole thing and guided us through. And we owe a tremendous debt to President Kennedy, when you think about it, for his remarkable leadership during the 13 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis, where everyone was telling him to bomb the island, get rid of the missiles. And he was saying, if they are nuclear, you know, then we're going to have a nuclear exchange. And so his handling of it, putting in place a quarantine instead of a full-scale war, was brilliant. And that really saved civilization. So he understood what was at stake with bringing war into space. But the deep state aspect, which was always very married to this Nazi aspect, and you know, you have the CIA directors like Dulles embracing that Nazi ideology and embracing those early figures and trying to make sure that they get, you know, that they don't get sentenced at Nuremberg. And really using the model of so many of that that Nazi intelligence set up, using it as a model for the CIA. So much so that when Truman is shown the original blueprint for the CIA, he says, this is too much like an American Gestapo. I can't go for it. And eventually he did. And he would say himself that he regretted that. And immediately after the Kennedy assassination, he penned a very important editorial for the Washington Post. And it said, kind of, the CIA was never meant to do this, was never meant to overthrow countries. And, you know, they were meant to get the president intelligence. And now they have their own Air Force. Like, what's going on here? And Alan Dulles, who had been fired by Kennedy, went down to Missouri and tried to get him to renounce his own article. And Truman's response was, look, I'm old. You can't, it's not going to work. The threat stuff's not going to work on me. I'm not renouncing anything. So the CIA, through the Washington Post, spread a number of stories that he was slipping, you know, that he has Alzheimer's or something. Kind of like Biden, right? And so this is kind of the nature of them hiding things at a crucial point. And we have to look at those crucial points. That editorial that Truman wrote came out a month to the day of President Kennedy getting assassinated. You think it's linked? Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is the real special report on the JFK assassination files. The files were a thud. You know, it was the CIA's attempt, again, with just a few records, to be like, hey, look at this Russian thing, and let themselves off the hook and the dangerous assassinations that they participated in, including the assassination of President Kennedy. We're going to be going more into this aerospace aspect, and we're probably going to go about another half hour here with this. We're not taking questions tonight, but we will be, of course, back next week for that. Okay. Another interesting shot of that tour that Kennedy was given by Forrestal. So again, we have Forrestal here, and in the back there is a very young, so this would be a 29-year-old Jack Kennedy, getting a feel for the destruction of Berlin after the war and really seeing how decimated that place was. And, you know, I think about so many of the operations and the things that we're seeing and the wars and rumors of wars and the kind of wars that we're in on the pharmaceutical side, on the media side, and the overreach of the World Economic Forum and others. And you think about that Berlin thing and how they had to rebuild after the destruction of Berlin. Well, make no mistake, you know, as their op fails through the good efforts of all of us, and hopefully it will, that's what we're going to be looking at, the kind of destruction that these people can wield with their really kind of psychotic feedback syndrome that they're in. And the Kennedy assassination is a crucial linchpin in the deep state power play, because what happened was, and I bring this up in relation to what we have now with the continuity of government program and how that's really coming to the surface. And we need to understand COG, and this is why the work of Professor Peter Dale Scott is so valuable, and I stress it on this program, and I try to get him on here as much as possible to describe COG for us, because he's the real expert, but I'll do my best. The continuity of government group creates a doomsday network in order to survive a nuclear attack in the 1950s. They build a vast underground structure for surveillance, for living, and to survive in the event of a nuclear war. So by the time you get to 1960 and President Kennedy, the strangeness is that when the assassination happens, there is a Secret Service agent, Winston Lawson, who is in that motorcade and has set up the motorcade, who is using not the regular communications channel, but he's using that doomsday network. So, you know, Professor Scott calls the assassination of President Kennedy the first deep state revolt against the presidency. Before, they were subverting democracies. They were running afoul of any international norms or American law. But here they actually turned their guns on the president. So the deep state assassination of the president becomes then a kind of genesis event for everything else that happens. So all the lies of the Vietnam War, you know, the Iran-Contra, the kind of bizarre things that we saw in relation to the COG being activated during 9/11, and the financial coup d'etat of 2008, the pharmaceutical coup d'etat we've been living through. These are threads, and they all go back to this deep state revolt against the White House. Because if you look at the presidencies after Kennedy, they all have kind of strange endings. You know, LBJ gets kind of thrown out and doesn't even run for re-election. Nixon, of course, has to resign because he's going to be impeached, because that whole Watergate thing, which Hunt is involved in again. I mean, here we have the same players involved in the Kennedy assassination. Then, of course, Carter doesn't last at all. He asks too many questions, and he's a puppet going in. But on the way out, he's no longer Brzezinski's puppet, and that's a problem. And then they put Reagan in, and they think, we're going to eliminate Reagan. We're going to assassinate him, get rid of him the way we got rid of Kennedy, but it's going to be quick. We're going to inaugurate him on January 20th and assassinate him in mid-March. That's pretty quick. And who's waiting in the wings but Vice President George Bush? And Bush had been the CIA director in the 70s. So this is the kind of orbit that we get into after the Kennedy assassination. It's like assassinations and deep state activity kind of rule the regular public structure. So going back to continuity of government for a minute, in that 80s period, it's Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, who at that time don't have anything really to do with the government. Don Rumsfeld had been the youngest defense secretary under President Ford, and Cheney had been a chief aide. But Cheney was just a congressman from Wyoming, which is not a particularly powerful position. And in fact, Rumsfeld had been the CEO for, you know, this chemical company that had brought us those artificial sweeteners, you know, aspartame, for example. So these guys were called in by Oliver North and George Bush to create a new version of COG, a version that not only would respond to a nuclear emergency, but any emergency. And so they became that underground government in total with the continuity of government version of the 80s. They had been building it all the way through since the 50s. But that version is particularly pernicious, and it becomes even more extensive, and it involves those rules that are so secret that you can't mention COG in Congress in that period. And when it comes up during the Iran-Contra hearings, Senator Inouye stands up and says, you can't say anything about that. And Oliver North's lawyer, who's a civilian, stands up and says, you can't talk about that to North. So they both know something that we don't know, which is continuity of government was the ultimate government secret. So what happens from that period on is continuity of government gets activated and during 9/11, and then we get NORTHCOM. And then NORTHCOM is set up to run America, the United States of America. This is beyond belief, but it's all because of the September 11th emergency powers. All these things thread together, but that COG group is crucial because it participated, as demonstrated, and this is something that Professor Scott demonstrates quite well, in the assassination scenario of President Kennedy. The Doomsday Network operation, they're using the Doomsday Communications Network. Then later we find out that the people who are responsible for other deep events are also involved with the COG network. For example, John Dean in Watergate, who was Nixon's lawyer that brought him down. And by giving his testimony, you know, there's cancer on the presidency and all that stuff, and reveals the taping mechanism. Now, and, you know, Butterfield and all these other guys are involved with that. But when you go further on and you get into Iran-Contra and the things that they're doing in COG in the 80s, Oliver North, again, is a key continuity of government personnel. by the time you get to George W. Bush in 9/11, you are looking at the major COG personnel of Cheney, Bush, and Rumsfeld. And there they are, activating it after 9/11. So we're still living under that September 11th emergency. And every year, every president, whether it's an Obama or a Trump or a Bush or a step for Biden, they have to sign on to it with the NDAA. This year's NDAA was particularly unusual because there was a big push to include a UFO office in all of this. And this, again, gets back to that original assassination attempt around Reagan, and then further back, the actual assassination of President Kennedy. Because the thread of history here is that there's something in aerospace that all of these players are fighting over. And we need to understand the nature of it. And in some of these key cases, we had a flashpoint. Garrison's prosecution of Clay Shaw, for example. What he found out was that Lee Harvey Oswald, who they used as the patsy in this operation, was saying to all his people, his co-workers at Riley Coffee Company, "I'm going to work for NASA." And instead, he goes to Dallas and gets set up as the patsy. Then when Garrison goes to investigate his other employees there at Riley Coffee Company in New Orleans, where Oswald was in the summer of 63, he discovers, well, they all went on to aerospace jobs. A lot of them went directly to work for NASA, like Oswald said he was going to do. So what, you know, whenever you get around Oswald, you're getting around the UFO file and the NASA file. That's not a conspiracy. It's provable fact through the Garrison files. And there's another piece, which is once Garrison discovered that Guy Bannister was Oswald's boss and that Guy Bannister was a major right winger, well, not only did it blow out the idea that Oswald was a communist who wanted to get revenge on, you know, capitalism by shooting President Kennedy and getting a job 6 weeks before the motorcade went by there, which hadn't even been announced, he just happened to get lucky enough to get a job right on the presidential motorcade. I mean, come on, who even believes that story? It's ridiculous. But it is interesting when we put these threads and these pieces together, because Oswald, in working for Bannister, is the ultimate aerospace connection, because Bannister was the head of the Chicago field office for the FBI, and his chief function was, he was the original FBI X-Files guy. He looked into and researched and interviewed the witnesses for UFO cases. So Oswald's boss is the top UFO guy for the FBI, and he creates the term X for all the UFO files. So, you know, the birth of the X steganography there for the aerospace side, bingo. Well, we pointed out earlier, the UFO file is sitting there staring us in the face again through the figure of John Kennedy and Forrestal's association. So this is the piece that's overlooked. And it's, again, it's being overlooked because so many of the people involved in what's happening now, Bezos, Musk, all using the X steganography, SpaceX, you know, the X steganography in Blue Origins that we've demonstrated on this program. It's all about aerospace. And their ability to get outside the Constitution and to get outside the norms of international law and everything else seems to be fundamentally about aerospace. This is the thing. And even the whole thing about let's go nuke Mars, you know, the whole thing is predicated around this. Now let's think about this. President Kennedy said, by the end of this decade, the 1960s, we're going to the moon. And he wanted a joint mission, which has been confirmed by Sergei, who is Khrushchev's son, and said, you know, they worked behind the scenes. They talked about it together. This is what they were going to do. So no arms race, no space race. They're going to do things together. This is what they had arrived at after almost blowing the world up. They had learned something. So And of course, after President Kennedy's assassinated, Khrushchev goes down like 6 months later. He's taken, he's removed, and he's kind of kept in home confinement, you know, until he dies a couple of years later. I mean, he's taken down as well. So there's a lot of removal of leaders there, but what is the mechanism that was doing it? The UN leader dies in a plane crash. Of course, we had the attempt on de Gaulle, and Kennedy, you know, was saying to the French ambassador, look, our CIA was involved in this, and I can tell you, I don't have the ability to, I don't have control over them. That's what he said to the French ambassador. This is the nature of the situation that President Kennedy was in. So when we get, by the time we get to that famous quote that he relayed to Arthur Schlesinger, who was a chief, well, he's a friend to the Kennedy family and also an amazing chronicler of history. He said, I'm going to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. And the way that he had decided to do that was through something called National Security Action Memorandum Number 57. The idea was he would take the powers for paramilitary covert operations away from the CIA and give it back where it belonged, to the Joint Chiefs and the Pentagon. So he created the DIA. A lot of people forget about this. The Defense Intelligence Agency was the creation of President Kennedy as a response to the CIA. And after his death, what happens? The CIA largely takes over his creation. So the DIA, instead of being, you know, this kind of pushback against the CIA, they become, you know, a lapdog, basically. Unfortunately, and I'm sure there are exceptions all along the way. But the problem with the Central Intelligence Agency is it grows in power and it's overthrowing other countries. You know, it's committing assassinations. It's got its own air force. It has its own drone policy. You know, by the time you get up to the Trump election, you're looking at John Brennan trying to get private citizen Trump on a number of trumped up phony charges relating to Russia, Russian collusion, and all this kind of stuff. And that's all CIA games, very dangerous games. And of course, Brennan now is coming out as the champion of what? Oh, the UFO file. He wants that damn government to give up those records. You know, it's amazing, right? This guy was in the government. He could give up anything. He knows all the secrets. He could give them all up himself. So we have this weird CIA narrative of, you know what? The public likes whistleblowers. Tell you what we'll do. We'll take our key people and pretend that they're whistleblowers to the public and just roll it out that way. it's called the whistleblower game. That's where you get Elizondo and Mellon and all that kind of nonsense. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Whew. Well, I'll tell you, they did it to us again with the JFK assassination records release. They included a lot of fluff and no substance and held back the key records, which are the Garrison files and the George Joannides files. Unfortunately, it's hard to get to the bottom of the whole aerospace piece, but we have enough pieces to move things along. Now, one of the interesting keys about these files and why this story may yet turn history on its head is that something interesting happened a couple of weeks ago, and I pointed it out here on this show. So we had Judge Napolitano, who's a very popular liberty figure and has been on network channels and Fox and all these other places for years, but is more of a libertarian, I'd say, than a conservative. And he was a close friend of President Trump. They had a falling out during Trump's presidency. And, you know, they turned on each other. But one of the things that Napolitano was saying, and he was talking to Gerald Celente, they do a podcast once in a while, is he said, I want to talk about how we aren't able to get these JFK records. And this drives me crazy because they were promised to us. And I said that to President Trump, and he promised me personally he was going to release them when the time came. And then when the time came, I was talking to him on the phone, and he said, I talked to him on the phone almost every day. And that Trump said to him, I can't release those records because the CIA came in and showed me the things that were in there. Now I can't do it. And Napolitano was freaked out, and he said, come on, you said you were going to do it. You can't treat people like children. No matter what they showed you or what's in there, you have to show it. And that Trump said to him, Andrew, if you knew what was in those files. You couldn't release it either. Now, this is the first real indication that there's a core reason behind just connecting some dots for not releasing those files that the CIA has. This is the nature of the situation we find ourselves in. And it is a brutal situation. What is it that is going to freak out President Trump from releasing these files? Does it relate to the UFO file? One. Two, does it plainly demonstrate, was there a mechanism left in there by Bobby Kennedy in working with the leader of the CIA that the Kennedys had chosen after they had fired Dulles? Is there some mechanism that was left in there that would reveal this? And is that why those records will never see the light of day? This is what it starts to appear as. Now, there was a big spin, of course, in the media, and you know, they came out and said, oh, these records, you know, they were kept tight because no one wanted World War III with the Soviets because, you know, it was those Russians that wanted to kill Kennedy. Let me give you a little history lesson, speaking to the author of these reports, and I'll read that some of that report. That was in Politico. What's missing from the new JFK document release? All the assassination files were supposed to be public in 2017. And then they say Donald Trump blocked them. Well, Trump actually released more than anyone has, but he did block the CIA files on their desperate push, which is not a good move. But then they say Joe Biden is still holding some out. No, he's holding the whole trove out. What are you talking about? He let go of 15 nothing files. And so this is Philip Shannon, and Shannon's big thing is, oh, they don't want to reveal that the Russians try to kill Kennedy. You know? So it's that phony story. There have always been these phases of the stories of the Kennedy assassination. So phase one was Russia did it, right? Phase two is Oswald did it as a solo operator. And phase three was, oh, the Kennedys were trying to take out Castro, and the same mechanism they were using, like the mafia and all this stuff, came back to get them. Those are the three stories that the deep state had ready. None of them are true. The actual story is the deep state mechanism saw Kennedy as a national security threat to their interests because, one, he's sharing UFO information with the Soviets. That's a big no-no on their side because they have something that they're developing, which is a secret space program outside of NASA. And there's a certain point, as I've pointed out, where Kennedy says, what's going on here? Are there two tracks to this program? What are these guys doing? And that all comes out of this secondary influence that we got post-World War II with the Nazi scientists. It is the paperclip influence on this. That's why the aerospace piece needs to be understood. And that's the real truth around the records. That's why they hold the Garrison records, and that's why Joe and Eddie's records are held up. And if we think about the conversation that Napolitano had with Salente, it's actually very telling because President Trump is looking at this and saying, I can't release the Kennedy assassination files. It's too embarrassing to the government. You have to ask yourself what that could be. The only thing it could be, I mean, everyone already knows that the CIA assassinated President Kennedy. Come on. I mean, 75% of the public when polled don't believe the official version. And the, you know, the other version is that the CIA assassinated him, which is true. So when we're looking at this, it can't be that. It can't be just that the CIA records show that the CIA was involved. It has to be something else. In my opinion, it shows something related to this aerospace connection and how they basically took over the government using the continuity of government protocols. Now, the only thing I can really use as proof is that from 1972 to where we are now, there have never been any more manned moon missions. It doesn't make any sense. So when President Trump gets into office, he creates what? The Space Force. And what does he have Mike Pence do? He sets up a manned moon mission for 2024. And what happens under Stepford Biden? They say, we can't do 2024. You know what? It might be like later in the decade. You know what? We don't know when it'll be. So they've stepped off from this as well. So now whenever we get around this, we're looking at a 50-year gap that's not explained in history, which is, you know, as all this controversy about going to the moon, I, of course, accept that we went to the moon. But, and I think that there's a lot of anomalies that were discovered on the way to the moon, and I also think that the UFO file is involved in that, as are ruins on the moon. Well, I think there's enough for that. But there's no explanation for officially dumping an entire program for 50 years. 5-0. It's not money, because the programs are already paid for. So what is it? That development of the secrecy around the continuity of government, they had a great legal secrecy, because they could say, oh, anything that relates to the COG thing relates to how we survive a nuclear war. We can't let that information out there. Therefore, Congress can't see it. Nobody can leak this. So you can do anything. Now, what happens is at a certain point, those rules, probably in the 1970s, get flipped, and they get flipped into space. It's the same underground government. Remember, you have an overt government operating in the public, obeying orders and obeying rules and all the rest of it. And then the flip side, the covert government, which comes in and says, we don't like this president and what he's doing, let's kill him. So that covert government is created by what? It's a system. And the continuity of government is a key mechanism for that system, because of the secrecy. So we get into, you know, we hear about secret finance, we hear about the black budget. Well, how do you unravel those things? I mean, at a certain point, we're all starting to know it. So how do you stop this mechanism? Well, if they've applied those rules to space, then that gives us the 50 years of secret space development. That's where you get all the things about the secret space program and Gary McKinnon, the NASA hacker, hacking in and finding what? Well, he finds records of an off-world space officers program. And then what happens after that? All these Looney Tunes get on Gaia TV and start saying, I'm a secret spaceman or whatever. But the point is, the list, the core of the thing existed. That's what McKinnon saw when he got into NASA. So who are the off-world space officers? What is the off-world space program? So that means Elon Musk and all this idea of chemical rockets doing all these things, going to Mars and mining asteroids and all that, is just a farce. So we have to kind of get our heads wrapped around that while they're in the middle of locking us down and in the middle of the whole pharma takeover. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're here with a special JFK assassination report, and we're taking it to the full ramifications of what it is, not just the flimsy record release that they did today. And one of the things that I mentioned that they were trying to do was tie all this into QAnon, believe it or not. And they want to get you, when you talk about the JFK assassination, and here's the thing, here's the fundamentals of the JFK assassination. JFK goes to Dallas, November 22nd, 1963. He's assassinated at 1230. Supposedly he's assassinated, according to the official story, by a disgruntled communist who happens to bring his gun up to the sixth floor window, and he just got the job 6 weeks earlier. It's $1.25 an hour stacking books. This is Oswald, who lived in the Soviet Union, remember, which is a very odd thing in that period, because it was such a cold war between the countries that he must have had extra help getting into the Soviet Union. There's no question in my mind. But the whole idea, if you look at Oswald as a puzzle piece, someone wanted him to be able to have these real bona fides as being a Russian sympathizer, and then to stick him up in that window so they could say, aha, the Russians did this. This is the same game they're playing today with the files, the same exact CIA organization doing it. So we have to look at this and say to ourselves, what is the nature of what they were trying to pull off that day? They were trying to remove President Kennedy. Well, who's in the motorcade with Kennedy? As I mentioned, we have Winston Lawson, who set up the route. And ordinarily, when you're driving, you keep a president away from curves and turns where you have to slow down past 25 miles an hour. They slowed him down to 11 miles an hour, which is an easy shooting target. and they put him in the middle of triangulated crossfire. So that is first the COG representative doing that, and he's using the Doomsday Network communications when he does it. So in, right away, we have strange things going on. Then Oswald himself, he's worked for Guy Bannister. Guy Bannister was in charge of the X-File, and he's a major right-wing operator. Oswald had also been working at Tsugi in Japan, which is a high-security base. You don't put some flunky communist there. You put people you're training as for intelligence purposes. And in fact, he had, in Japan, he had certain types of operations that they put him in. Then by the time he gets to defecting to the Soviet Union, he's already had a lot of practice in how to handle unusual situations. He also is incredibly well trained in language, which is not explained, by a high school education. He can speak Russian. He can speak German really well. He speaks Russian so well when he meets Marina at a dance, and she is the niece of a GRU colonel, which is a CIA in Russia. When he meets her, she thinks he's Russian because his Russian is so good. That's pretty good Russian. That Oswald, the disgruntled book guy, is, supposedly this kind of disgruntled misfit of society up there on the sixth floor. Well, he speaks Russian so well that native speakers think he's Russian. So let's think about the kind of training that this guy had. It's very high-end training, and they had used Oswald for a number of years. Remember, he joined the Civil Air Patrol when he's 15. And who is his squad commander? David Ferry. David Ferry is a CIA pilot. He runs drugs back and forth from South America. So that's the key piece. This is where Garrison gets into things. And this is, I think, why the Stone film caused such an outrage. And they didn't even really go into the aerospace side. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report on the JFK assassination. We'll go a few more minutes here. And I want to thank Carolyn Kat Goiter for running the chat out there for us tonight. In the ideas room, I see great faces and great questions. We will, in the next show, get to a lot of your questions tonight. I'm going to try to wrap this up with trying to tie over the records that they released and the kind of story that they're trying to spin with it. Okay, Philip Shannon over at Politico is he's saying, on the surface, this moment, the imminent release of long secret documents from a JFK assassination library looks like a victory for transparency. The release revives a decade-old declassification process that stalled in 2017 when President Trump failed to comply with the legal deadline to make the entire library public. It's actually the Central Intelligence Agency that failed to, and then President Trump gave them a delay. But let's make no mistake, the Central Intelligence Agency wouldn't let the information out. And we saw from the conversation that Trump had with Napolitano, there is something explosive in those records. And this is what's interesting. That gives us 10 times more reason why they should be released, and there should be a huge outcry to get them. So now they have the spin. Remember, the first spin is, oh, there's nothing to these records. The next spin is Trump didn't obey the mandate. And then by the time they get to Biden, they're like, well, he's doing pretty good with it. Yeah, he's all right. Except for Biden's okay. The CIA, FBI, and other agencies had protested to Trump that the documents revealed national security secrets that half a century after Kennedy's murder were still too sensitive to be public. That's ridiculous. All right. Soviet Union doesn't even exist anymore. Fidel Castro is dead. If you had agents in the field, these guys would be 30, 40 years old in 1963. Add 60 years on top of that. They're like 95 to 110. Most of them are dead. And they're certainly not active agents. And if they are, you got to email me, because if you're a 100-year-old CIA agent, we want to know what's going on. In October, President Biden announced he was restarting the process of declassifying and releasing the documents. But, you're not going to see him to 2029, but don't worry, because that process has been restarted by Stepford Biden. The announcement also contained an admission that should worry anyone who truly believes in transparency. Biden is the first president to come close to acknowledging what cynical conspiracy theorists have long assumed. There are assassination-related documents sealed away at the archives that might never be made public, at least not in the lifetime of anyone who remembers where they were when they heard the shocking news. This is interesting. So there's a spin here with Shannon where he's kind of saying, oh, what an outrage. We won't get those records. But in fact, the tone of it should be, there's no way we could not get those records because, you know, by law, they're mandated. So therefore, we'll press a legal case and get them. No, Shannon is saying, we have to kind of accept it. We're not going to get those records in our lifetime. So the article is a psychological operation. So going on, what they do is they suggest that Biden's main argument is that there's identifiable harm in those records. So the question is, harm to who? It's not harm to agents. It's not harm to international relations because, you know, people in Russia hate the former Soviet Union and they hated living under that. So it's not that. So what? You think it would embarrass the United States 60 years later to say, oh, the, you know, we were trying to kill Fidel Castro? That's not it. Everybody already knows that. They knew that in the late 60s. So, and even earlier. So that's not it. Obviously, it's something embarrassing to the Central Intelligence Agency itself. The identifiable harm is to the non-constitutional, extra-constitutional, illegal operation known as the Central Intelligence Agency. That's the rub here. And remember, the Central Intelligence Agency has the most influence over the media. So the media could push this. They could push it hard for transparency the way they have other things and just flip out. But they're not. They just kind of entertain it once in a while. Like, hey, everyone, look, there might be a JFK assassination file. Woo, woo. Here's some headlines and some clicks. Doesn't do anything to move the story forward. Now, it's interesting because in the 1970s, they put together the House Assassinations Committee. The House Assassinations Committee already ruled in Congress that President Kennedy was killed by a probable conspiracy. And then they referred it to the Justice Department to prosecute. The Justice Department never prosecuted. That's where the problem broke down. Congress came forward, Congress pressed it, Congress said there was a conspiracy. Instead, the media was like, well, since that didn't happen, we'll go back to the Warren Commission, which was a huge whitewash. And the members of the Warren Commission were proven later to not even believe what it was. And of course, Johnson himself was caught saying to Walter Cronkite, I don't believe that he was killed by Oswald. So then the aides for Johnson went to Cronkite and said, don't air that. But I showed the clip in my documentary, Agent Oswald. And I think that's a crucial piece when we see that, that Johnson doesn't believe it. He knows better, of course. He participated in it. And I think this is where we need to go with it. So in fact, what we need to, in order to get transparency in that situation, one, we need those records. I would like to see President Trump say what he saw in those records that shocked him, or at least relate the nature of it and relate if it was related to aerospace and if it was related to the Central Intelligence Agency assassination of President Kennedy. Because if he can't relate the exact details because he would be, you know, in breach of national security, he certainly could suggest what that answer to Napolitano meant. And I think that the conversation that Napolitano had with Trump in relation to the actual JFK files are worth 10 lame articles from Philip Shannon about how we just need to give up on those, ever seeing those records. And, oh, it's too bad. But whatever that secret was related to the Russians, you know, we just have to accept it. And by the way, Oswald, you know, he was in with the KGB. So you see, they were right. It wasn't the CIA. And God damn that QAnon and all those domestic terrorists out there. So this is the nature of how they've shaped the argument. But that doesn't go in. As far as journalism goes, that's the pits. Because all it is a stage show. And there's a lot of stagecraft. Tons of stagecraft going on in relation to the UFO file as well. I pointed out in relation to these people and their backgrounds, they're highly, you know, in the case of the senator from New York, Gillibrand, you know, her parents are directly involved in a sex cult, you know, and the NXIVM sex scandal, where Rainier went to prison for 70 years. When it comes to a highly compartmentalized secret program, is this the ideal person that you want leading the search for it? Because she's highly blackmailable. So therefore, to keep your secrecy, all you have to do is say, hey, look, I've got your dad, you know, on Epstein Island, and that's it. So this is how we need to do it. I think we need to look at the politics through a completely new lens, and they're trying to block it every time we look through that lens and say, oh, it's a domestic terrorist thing, it's a conspiracy thing, or it's Q. That's junk conspiracy on their part, because this stuff existed way before Q and the problems associated with it. We went through the Warren Commission, and then what? The Rockefeller Commission, the Pike Commission, the House Assassination, you know, the House Committee on Assassination. Then we went through the Assassination Records Review Board, the JFK Assassination Act. You know, that had nothing to do with QAnon. That's been going on for generations. We've had people living and dying. You know, we're talking about grandparents and great grandparents and mothers and fathers. It has nothing to do with Q. People have been doing this and doing this research for years. Professor Scott's 92 years old, you know. I mean, he was doing the research in 1963, okay? So this is a generational, intergenerational thing. It has nothing to do with, you know, the excuse that they have for not being transparent. And they try to get the questions, if you ask about them, and say, oh, that's a loony conspiracy theory. Well, how loony is it? Think about it. 5 years ago, the Central Intelligence Agency said, remember all those things that were flying in the sky in the 50s and 60s and 70s? That was us. We were testing new aircraft. That's the line that they wanted to take before the UFO threat thing became their, you know, just the apple of their eye. And that's where they were coming from. So they can make anything loony or make anything a threat or make anything real or make it important based on, you know, how their programs are operating at that time. It's too much power invested in one organization. This is the nature of the problem. And that problem comes up every time these files come up and the presidents don't release them, because it shows the power of the Central Intelligence Agency over the country, over these other countries, over the global economy, over global news. It's too much power. So at what point do you say, you know what? I know all this other stuff is going on, but the Central Intelligence Agency has too much power. And the first thing that we can do to kind of have that power and bring them down and level that organization is reveal the fact that they assassinated President Kennedy. The evidence is overwhelming of their involvement in the assassination and in the cover-up. And I'm going to give you one piece of that. And of course, President Kennedy himself said, I don't have control over the Central Intelligence Agency. That's what the French ambassador told about his conversation with Kennedy. That's a pretty big deal. Remember, as I said, Kennedy had been in ONI. He understood intelligence really well. And he understood the limitations that they have legally and the fact that these guys were just trampling over the Constitution. So we have to kind of keep that in mind as we go forward, that when we get to the Kennedy assassination, it's not who shot JFK or, you know, was the mafia involved or any of that stuff. It has to do with the deep state removing a duly elected president, that so they're overriding the citizens' desire. It is, in fact, a coup d'etat since 1963. And then the entire establishment of the media and everything else being dishonest and going along with it. And for years, and I mean for years, you know, you can go back and look at the 70s, the late 60s, the 80s. There are all these ridiculous things that are funded. And they're like, you know, it really was Oswald, so you really should just stop thinking about it. And it's so ridiculous. Oswald didn't have the ability as a shooter to do the shooting. The shots came, the fatal shots came from the front. there was no magic bullet. The magic bullet was a ridiculous plant, you know. So that stuff is absurd. And it's a punchline in culture for people to suggest something absurd. So nobody believes that. So that's just where we are right now, where the citizens understand that that's a lie. The majority of them do. I'm sure some don't care, but enough people, if you would ask them who are aware of the situation, they would say, yeah, you know, the official story is ridiculous. So we understand it. And yet it's still, it's a hallmark of our civilization that it's, we're, our history is based on a lie. And we have a lot of those going all the way, you know, the Federal Reserve and World War II, et cetera. There's a lot of fundamental lies when the foundation has really deteriorated in the country as it relates to this. So we need to be able to recapture that kind of moral center as a country, and we can lead the world with that. When you see, you know, people getting put into camps in Australia, it's an international crisis, right, that should be brought before the UN, and all nations should be concerned about the fascist treatment of their citizens by the Australian government. It's fundamental, like, you know, these are the things, these are the moments, we're right in the middle of it. And this history and the deep belief in freedom that President Kennedy had and the deep changes that he made in less than 3 years, which is remarkable, and being the youngest president ever elected, he, in that sense, is a great symbol and gives us a great inspiration in the work that we need to do now in order to set the society in the direction of transparency and growth and freedom, because it's been going into this freak zone of Bill Gates and Fauci and the World Economic Forum. This whole thread, this spilling out of insanity, and here we are. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is our special report on the JFK assassination. We'll do about 10 more minutes here. I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That keeps us in touch. And it's a free newsletter, but it'll let you know what important shows that we have coming up for you. And also, in the event that our social media should ever get shut down, in the event that this fantastic voyage should turn to erosion, we'll have that pipeline directly to us. And I think that that's crucial and will make a huge difference. And we have some great shows coming up for you, along with the X series returning in 2022. Okay. Let's see if I can make these last 10 minutes really count. and I'm going to be going, pouring through those records that they released further, of course, and seeing what other researchers dig up from it. So if there's anything that is compelling, I certainly will be digging around for that. That this is the suit, by the way, that Jefferson Morley brought to the CIA to get Joe Annitti's records, and it has received some attention. It should receive a lot more attention. I try to put it on the radar as much as I can. But what Morley says is, on April 29th, my attorney, Dan Hardway, filed a petition asking the Supreme Court to review my case, Morley versus the CIA. When I filed the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit 16 years ago, I sought certain files related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963. The JFK story still resonates, albeit more faintly than it once did. Kennedy was a popular liberal president who, at the time of his death, was challenging the country to embrace civil rights and a strategy for peace to end the Cold War. That's a crucial element and aspect here. Detested in the Pentagon and CIA as a weakling and a traitor, Kennedy was shot dead as his open-air motorcade passed through downtown Dallas on a sunny day, November 1963. Oddly enough, there was a guy out there with an umbrella on a sunny day. Isn't that interesting? Right at the assassination scene. Ah, umbrella man. All right, see, what else do I have here? Avril Haines. We'll do more with her later. But remember, when we see these types, the intelligence types, talking about UFOs, that's scary stuff. That's when, you know, the red flags should go off. Ba-bling, ba-bling, the warning meters should be going off. You start getting CIA people saying that they're giving you UFO disclosure. Just get out of there. This is also interesting, though, as I've pointed out, the series of Congress people that they have coming forward being like, oh, these, you know, the UAP must be aliens. And you've never heard of these people ever talking about aliens or UFOs or anything like that. And so you say to yourself, what on earth is going on here? Why, you know, and this, in the last episode, I went through the information about Ruben Gallego, who was here over at Harvard for a number of years and graduated in 2004. But when he went into the military, he became a psychological operations specialist for crowd control. And he was in the Iraq War and stuff. And then he shows up, he has a totally different name. And then he shows up with a entirely different identity. So this is very strange. And then he becomes the congressman. His wife becomes the mayor of Phoenix. They're divorced now. But all of a sudden, this guy is Mr. UAP, UFO transparency. Where did he come from? What's going on here? And is this part of the psychological training that he received from the intelligence people inside of the military? That's got to be asked and answered. And, you know, the UFO field really letting their people down. It's unfortunate. But you get these people who are just interested in being on the History Channel or something. I'm not interested in being on the History Channel. I just want to get you the facts on this stuff. And I want to call out the influence of the Central Intelligence Agency on the UFO file. So that's something that we can do on this program. And why the majority of the UFO field falls on their face and bows down before the CIA operation around the UFO threat is a mystery to me. And I've stopped asking at this point. This aspect, the Trump aspect with the Space Force and how it relates to Kennedy, there's a couple of crisscross things with Kennedy and Trump. One of them is the Space Force. And the Space Force, again, is that attempt of the presidential level to pull back the information in the UFO file back under presidential control. They had it under Eisenhower. Eisenhower lost it, and he lost it to some power that was between the intelligence community and the aerospace companies. That's where we are. And so the defense contractors are right in there. And the people that Garrison identified on that front, I'll give you the actual identification here because I think it's crucial. Remember, the Garrison files are the ones that the CIA won't release. But those companies are Boeing, Lockheed Martin. And, you know, we still see them incredibly active. This is 50 years later, and they're still the top dogs. Okay. Warren Hinkle wrote a memoir, and he was the guy who ran Ramparts magazine, which was kind of like, sort of like the Village Voice. It was a smart political magazine in the 60s. It was really big. And Garrison was interviewed by it, and then he developed this relationship with Hinkle where he was giving him information about his sources and things of this nature. And Hinkle was getting afraid because he was getting followed. And so Garrison starts calling him, and he's running all around these different offices trying to avoid Garrison's call. But Garrison catches up with him. And he talks about Garrison and how Garrison kind of put him at risk and all the rest. But I think that Garrison really saw him as somebody who could keep this information. And here's what Garrison had to say. And this is why they keep the Garrison files out. Listen closely. Garrison began talking when I picked up the mailroom extension. Quote, this is Garrison. This is risky, but I have little choice. It's imperative that I get this information to you. Now, important new evidence has surfaced. Those Texas oil men do not appear to be involved in President Kennedy's murder the way we first thought. It was the military industrial complex that put up the money for the assassination. But as far as we can tell, the conspiracy was limited to the aerospace wing. That's Garrison's conclusion. The aerospace wing of the military industrial complex. So, this is the person who brought the only trial on the death of John F. Kennedy, who had legal subpoena power. And that's where he placed the blame for the assassination of President Kennedy. I wrote down the names of the three different defense contractors. So this is what Garrison said to him. I've got the names of three companies and their employees who were involved in setting up the president's murder. Do you have a pencil? I wrote down the names of the three defense contractors. Garrison identified them as Lockheed, Boeing, and General Dynamics. And the names of those executives and their employee, whom the district attorney said had been instrumental in the murder of President Kennedy. I also logged a good deal of information about a mysterious minister who was supposed to have crossed the border into Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the assassination. The man wasn't a minister at all, Garrison said, but an executive with a major defense supplier in clerical disguise. That's where we need to go in terms of the research into the JFK assassination and not into the CIA circles about, hey, you know, Oswald was an agent of Moscow. And finally, I mentioned this. This is Antonio Veciana, and he gave this testimony at the end of his life. He'd been shot, actually, but he ran anti-Castro groups for the United States government. And he claimed that David Atlee Phillips, who is in charge of all covert operations for the CIA, that's Alan Dulles, during the time of Kennedy, he claims that when he was being trained, that this CIA director of all operations was David Atlee Phillips, was training Oswald as well. And in 2013, he goes on record and he says, "Dear Marie Fonzi," who is the wife of Gaetan Fonzi, who was a really important JFK researcher, "you may publish the following statement from me. Maurice Bishop, my CIA contact agent, was David Atlee Phillips," this gentleman, and he also shows up in a couple of our documentaries. "Phillips was the man I saw with Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas in September 1963. September is 2 months before the assassination. And he's going on the record with his own confession. That's it. There it is. That's what they need to open up. When they look into these records, they should have a congressional committee say, we have a top man in our own operations who said, David Atlee Phillips was training Oswald. You could open up the whole thing right there and get to the truth. But they don't want to do that, and they don't want to release those records. And now, through the conversation of Judge Napolitano, we know why. And with that, we'll be pressing forward to get those facts, and we'll be keeping our eye on what they are doing in relation to this. But obviously, the trail leads directly to two things, Aerospace's door and the UFO file. It's undeniable through the presentation that we gave tonight. And I'll remind you that this takes us back to Paperclip, because right there you have the top man in our space program, Wernher von Braun. And there's Walter Dornberger, who we pointed out was the head of Bell Helicopter. And he trained Michael Payne. Michael Payne was his protege. And who was Michael Payne housing? He was housing the Oswalds. I mean, those are the facts that are on record, but this is them before they were integrated into the American space program. They're Nazis, everyone. So I think we've had this hint that the Nazis got into our government for sure, but the aerospace aspect I don't think has been investigated properly. So that's where I think we're going to find the key on the CIA aerospace side. It is that X-Protect group that protects the UFO file. And that does relate to more than just aerospace advancements. But you can leave it there if you want to. But it certainly relates to actual UFOs as well. And that, you know, remember, John F. Kennedy was assassinated, according to Hunt, over the UFO file because of the alien presence. And there we have it. Everyone, it's been fantastic to be with you tonight. I'm going to do some shout outs before I leave here. The Cove Channel. Wow, it's great to see you. Esoteric Gold. Nick Malone, Ron Frey, Files, yeah, you know, I mean, maybe. Tom Miller, it's great to see you out there. Carl Jung, Nazis running the government. Well, look at what we're looking at now. People talking openly about camps. Sound familiar? they may have played their hand too open. Let's see. Fabulous show, Daniel. Thank you. I appreciate that. Anthony Dees, thank you. Roosevelt, it's great to see you, sir. Derek Vigil, thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Everyone who gave super chats to the show tonight, thank you. And we really appreciate your support, along with all our great subscribers, really helping to move this information forward. We'll stay on top of this, and we certainly will get you more answers on it. Esoteric Gold, it's great to see you. Ron Frey, Karen Carpenter, Gigi, Abby Lynn, thank you very much. Excellent info as always. Boy, I appreciate that. Nick Malone. There's Gigi. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Kilroy was here. I like that. That's a Styx song too, isn't it? It's Mr. Roboto. Scarlet Fire, Green Queen. Anyway, I have Kate out there. It's great to see you. Yes, Claire Kramer. Thank you very much. It's much appreciated. And we really appreciate your support. Brandy Renee, it's great to see you out there. Thanks for being a part of the show. Jed I, Silver Fox. It's a great crew out there. I wanted to show everybody something. Let's see what I got. Somebody sent me this. A great fan in Canada. And isn't that remarkable? But just when you think that that's really remarkable, you turn it around and it's the entire outline of all the different UFO shapes. Isn't that an incredible thing? I'll figure out what to do with that, but wow, just amazing. Thank you very much for sending that over. That's a cool Christmas present. A couple more shout outs here and then we're out. Al Qaeda, it's great to see you out there. Kat Goida, are you still out there? It was great to have you. Thank you for being in there for the ideas room and helping us keep things afloat. I know you had some crazy tornado-like weather, and I hope it's all going real well. Jennifer Walters, Wally Fango, Tango Foxtrot. I get it. I get it. There we go. Awesome, says Karen Carpenter. Thanks so much. They just announced that there's a tornado on the ground, says Kat Goida. Is that directly by you? Is that what you're talking about? Holy, unbelievable. The things that people are going through with these incredible weather swings, I'm off the charts. Well, stay safe over there. You can sign off if you need to, please. Just get somewhere safe and deep. Able-bodied, it's great to see you out there. Thanks for joining the show. We will see you all. I got some special interviews coming up for you, and we'll be back also in January with the X series, but we'll have some shows for you this weekend as well. And some, as I said, kind of very interesting interviews coming up. I won't reveal who yet, but you know that they're coming. And thank you. Thank you, Robbie Norton. Outrageous. Thank you, sir. Much obliged. Charlie F., Tom Miller. You know, it's interesting. I'm really glad we all got together tonight, because when they do the spin on the JFK files, it really is infuriating, and it shows you the level that we're at. So I think the show, we can get a lot closer to the truth on this, and it's going to help us in the grand scheme of things with all the things that we're looking into here on the X series. And, you know, we find out that the contemporary often has its roots in the past. So if we can balance the two, we're going to be in great shape. Thank you, Cosmic Ocean. I appreciate that. Unbelievable. Bethany Green. Do you notice that I've discovered this highlight button? I use it all the time now. There's one. Unbelievable. Fantastic. The bots don't expect DJ on Wednesday. Outsmarted most of them. Exactly. You show up in a weird timeline and you never know what's going to happen. Thank you, everyone. And we will see you all, as I said, with some surprises this weekend. And the X series is going to be back in 2022, right at the beginning of the year, with something very special for all of you. So we will see you this weekend. And thanks again for joining us. Remember to go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for that newsletter. It's a free newsletter and keeps us in touch with each other, come what may. Have a great week, and we'll see you shortly. Thanks, everyone. Great ideas room tonight. Off the charts. Thank you, Carolyn, Kat, Goida. Be safe down there.